League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Roscoe, and welcome to another episode of the Kings of Anglia Itchers Town podcast. And yes, it's me once again in the hot seat. Heathy is in Croatia, which is looking very nicely indeed. I'm actually going to Croatia myself next month, so we're just going to swap positions. But do not worry, I am joined by two fine gentlemen in Alex Jones and Stuart Watson as we try to get through another week of the international break, which... It's boring, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? It's boring. But we've got to get through it. Let's bring in the boys. Stuart Watson, my friend, published author and all that. How are you?
And all that. Good morning, Ross. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. This does feel a bit odd, hasn't it? Without an Ipswich game after, as you said, just before we started recording, after all the build-up, Liverpool, City, the excitement of the Fulham game last weekend. It's felt like a bit of a lull this weekend, but... still a few things for us to discuss, hopefully.
Indeed. AJ, come in, my friend. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah, I'm usually quite big on the internationals, but be it with time off or whatever, it's been a bit... Yeah, I'm really kind of bought into it that much. But otherwise, yeah, not too bad. I'm spending this podcast trying not to, because obviously it's all gone dark now. This is another kind of grim bit about this time of year. So we've got the lights on in my living room where I'm recording. I'm trying to make sure that the mirror behind me doesn't like shine and blind everyone. So I've moved to kind of block it with my head for those who are subscribing to watch this on video. Yeah, I don't like this time of year when it starts to go all cold and grey and horrible. But otherwise, I'm all right.
Yeah, I've still got my shorts on, ladies and gentlemen, but I think going forward for games... Yeah, I've got my...
Are you going to be wearing those to Brighton on Saturday?
Nah. Yes, Stu's got shorts on. Yeah, I just feel...
He's not going to prove that.
Well, we'll see. We'll sell.
I don't know if I've got the same flexibility as Ross to get into shorts.
Saw a bit of leg. So, yeah, shorts are still on in me and Stu's household. But, yeah, I'm looking at my window right now. It is very wet and, you know, just... dull, really. But this podcast won't be dull, though, boys, because we've got international talk, obviously got a mailbag to bring you, and I've also got a nice little feature at the end. But I've actually got a question we're going to chuck in before we get into this international roundup. Is we've got a question from Matt Cosburn, who said, it's international break weekend, so what have you all been up to? So I want to quickly chuck in a mailbag question just to have a little catch-up with you boys. Stu, I'm sure you've still got a lot of books to shift. But what did you get up to this weekend?
I took my mum out for an afternoon tea in Lavenham, birthday present from back in July. So finally had some time to go out and do that. So that was lovely on Saturday. What else did I do? Yesterday, bit of a DIY day, put a mirror up and I was up on some ladders clearing out the guttering as well. So... that was my weekend and lots of book stuff as well. Today, unashamed plug. I don't get to do this very often. I know people will probably get sick of hearing about it soon, but the Jason Dizell Follow the Thunder autobiography, which I've obviously helped co-write, is out officially today. And I've just had a look and Amazon are out of stock already. So that's exciting. So if you do want to get your hands on one sooner rather than later, these boxes here have got quite a few. So I mentioned it on the previous podcast. Drop me a line at jasondizellbook@gmail.com and I can get one out to you in the post. So thank you for all the lovely feedback on that so far. I've had some nice pieces in the Mirror and the Guardian over the last few days. So really pleased with how that's going. So yeah, if you want one, give me a shout.
Yeah, looking forward to reading it, my friend. And I'll give you my review and all that jazz. I'll probably put that as it. AJ, what did you get up to? Did you go to another concert or anything?
No, unfortunately not. I don't have anything like that penciled in till Oasis next year, which is kind of sad. Who knows? Hopefully that will change. I spent my entire weekend mapping out and watching every second of all the international games. Sorry, didn't do that. No, I was out for a bit. I went over to Luton to go see my girlfriend. Most of our weekends are shopping, to be fair, whenever we have like a free weekend or anything like that. So just going around. I feel like I'm getting quite old now. You get quite excited by going into TK Maxx and seeing some fancy glasses or something like that. Or
it's
finding
it's a slippery slope, Alex.
I know, it's concerning. But I don't know if anyone else agrees that like TK Maxx is one of just the God's greatest places ever, just for all the kind of rubbish you will ever find. So not as exciting as like selling a book or anything like that, unfortunately, but just a nice relaxed weekend. We don't get too many of those in our job, given all the travel that we have to do and all the work and writing. But when you get the opportunity, I'd try and take it, ideally not by like selling books or putting up mirrors or something like that. I'll just have it nice and easy, nice and calm.
Of course, we're not complaining, ladies and gentlemen. We're not complaining.
No. Wait till you've got your wait till you get your own place, Alex, and you and your other half are together. Mm. And you'll sit down on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, and you think, oh, nice, relax. I've got nothing on today. Nice and relaxing. Then you'll see your wife appear with a tape measure, and you know you're in trouble. Better not get too comfortable here.
Was that exactly how it worked for you? Was that how
it's
it happened?
It's pretty much how it happens. I'm sure many people be listening and nodding along to that. That's a glimpse into your future.
Blimey.
bring it on. If you want to know what I was up to, probably people don't really care, but I was actually across the border. I was in Norwich on the weekend, and I was very Ross was doing a heafy, really doing a going to a posh restaurant. I went to a French restaurant, boys, which was very nice. A bistro French restaurant in Norwich, which is very nice indeed. The Lille Hexagon, probably said it completely wrong, but it was very nice. I had some French food. Shout out to my other half who organised that, and it was very nice indeed. So we had some wine, we had some beers and all that. Very nice. Norwich is a city. I have to admit, it's a lovely place. The football club, we all know. Won't get into that, but we all know that. Nice weekend. But I'm looking forward to Brighton this weekend coming. But internationals, boys, should we talk about that? Because there's some news that's been dropping. At the moment, there's only one sort of injury news. Obviously, Amari Hutchinson, not with the under-21s. Now he's back with us. But yes, Stu, AJ, I'll let you sort of take over here. Obviously, it was Ireland versus England on the weekend as well. So we saw three of our Irish lads taking on England. And obviously, Declan Rice and Jack Grealish scored, which were former Ireland players. But Stu, AJ, you want to take over?
Well, I'll deal with the Amari situation first. That is, I think, the first thing to say is that from our understanding, it's nothing too serious. You see it quite often, don't you, with a host of players called up by the under-21s and then returning, because I think it's probably club holding more power than country, rightly or wrongly. So if there's any hint of kind of knocks, fatigue, things like that, then they take no risks. And I think Ipswich have probably said, look, we want to wrap him up in Cottonwood. He's just had his first full season of senior football last year in the Championship, which is one of the most grueling divisions going. I remember after the Sheffield Wednesday game, the 6-0 game, Amari talking about how it had taken its toll on his body and he felt quite sore. And he then had a limited start to pre-season as well, didn't feature in the early games. No sort of major injury there. It was sort of medical assessment was the terminology, but I think that's just Ipswich treading a little carefully with him. So he's made a good start, hasn't he, to the Premier League, and they won't be wanting, especially with the number of attacking players in the treatment room at the moment, won't want to be taking any risks. So interesting to see how Amari's international future pans out. He's represented Jamaica twice at senior level, but not in a competitive game. So his options are still open. Last year, he decided just to put all international thoughts on hold and got called up both by England youth and Jamaica senior and basically said no to both. And I just want to focus on my club football and I'll make a decision further down the line. And he's obviously just been, you know, temporarily been in this England under 21 squad, and you would imagine now he's had a big money move to a Premier League club that he's probably thinking that, that England is a is an option for him. I shouldn't think he'll be tying himself to Jamaica anytime soon. His father's from Jamaica, so that's why he's eligible to represent them. So we'll see how that pans out. But no Amari international action this weekend, which I think is a good thing for Ipswich.
Yeah, and obviously Dalap obviously came off the bench for England under-21s. I think he's the first Ipswich Town player since Connor Wickham to win an under-21s cap, which is you know, pretty interesting indeed. And they're sort of similar, aren't they, Connor Wickham? You know, when Connor Wickham was coming through, I know obviously Leon Dalap is not an academy graduate, but they've both got the sort of same build and they're big boys, aren't they? So interesting. Muric is the big talking point though, boys. AJ, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, from what we know about it in terms of the fact that he's been out representing Kosovo. I can't remember how many caps he has, but he's got quite a few now as an established first choice for Kosovo at international level, has been for quite a while. I think he's probably got well over at least 20, 30 caps for them for a 25-year-old goalkeeper. It's not bad. I can see Stu already tapping in the background to go find out how many caps he's got as well. And yeah, he's obviously had an interesting start for life at Ipswich since making his £8 million move from Burnley in terms of missing the first game against Liverpool through injury, then having the Manchester City incident where it's probably at fault for two of the goals, to be honest, and then coming in with an improved performance against Fulham as well. And they've been out on international duty where he played the first game, which was a 3-0 defeat at home to Romania. Didn't go down too well in terms of those who support Kosovo at international level. And then has since been sent home. I think Stu can kind of clarify a bit more in terms of the actual wording of what's been said, but essentially it's an internal issue in terms of disciplinary action that's been taken against him, and I think it was a couple of others. And yeah, because of that, he's now been sent back. A lot of social media stuff going on and around this one, but other than that, I don't know if there's too much more that we know about it. Unfortunately, it's one that, yeah, without that kind of validation, there's too much, it's too hard to talk about in too much depth. But it's also one of those where there will be some question marks with them now coming back as well. What will Ipswich's stance be on all of these different things? I believe it's something to do with him staying out too late past a curfew, which obviously is not ideal around international fixtures, particularly for Kosovo at a competitive level in the Nations League. But yeah, one that will definitely raise some eyebrows and probably has been the big talking point of the break so far from Ipswich's perspective.
39 caps from what I can see. That was just a quick Wikipedia look. So yeah, decent number of caps for, what is he, still mid-20s, Aaron Muric. Difficult for us to say too much around this at the moment because it's all rumour and speculation. We know he's, you know, there's an official statement from the Kosovo FA to say that he's been sent home for rather vaguely breaking team regulations set out by the manager. You know, plenty of social media rumour that, as Alex says, that's to do with nightclubbing and staying out too late, that sort of thing. You know, it's important to say we can't confirm that. And it looks like Arrow has done an interview in Kosovo to sort of deny that and say that he feels that that's harsh and not the case as well. So a story that we need to put a bit more meat on the bone for at the moment. Don't think we probably need to go overboard on it. He won't be the first or the last player, if indeed that is the case, that's maybe stayed out a little too late. So I'm sure Kieran McKenna, who's very big on character and personality in his squad, will not just him, but his teammates as well, I think will self-police this. If indeed it does need self-policing, it means he's come home a little bit earlier. He would have been due to play in Cyprus tonight. So I guess from an Ipswich perspective, getting him back a few days earlier in preparation for Brighton is a good thing. So as Alex says, we'll see if at all anything is said from Kieran McKenna and the club going forwards. I shouldn't think too much will be made of it, but we'll see.
Okay, then we'll move on then. And let's talk about the Irish boys then, AJ, because I know you watched the game. They're playing England. 2-0 win for England, obviously, against Che Ogbene, Dara O'Shea and Sammy Smodox, all winning caps, played the full 90 as well. So, you know, good challenge for them taking on England with under Lee Carsley, who wouldn't sing the national anthem, who went into the wrong dugout as well. There's also a, you know, pitch invader and all that. But, yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I think Lee Carsley, there's a lot of talk about him in the build-up to this, but the football that England played is a lot, lot better than what we've seen from England in the last few years, as much as Gareth Southgate deserves a lot of praise for what he's done. Some of the play against Ireland on Saturday I was really, really impressed by. From the Irish perspective in particular, this felt like a really huge game. There were a lot of interviews doing the rounds in terms of the build-up to this. I don't think they played each other in a competitive setting potentially this side of the millennium. I don't think it's been a long, long time since these two sides have met at a competitive level. So when the draw was made, there's a lot of hype about it. But clearly, two different sides. When you look at the Irish team in general, it's got a very EFL feel to it. I can't necessarily go through and kind of say how many of them are EFL based, but it looks around about half, maybe, in terms of those who've either come through or are playing in the Football League at the moment, and then coming up against these world-class England players is always going to be a bit of a gap. But really good to see Dara O'Shea, Sammy Smodox and Ogbene all playing in the team. O'Shea obviously at the back, and then I think Smodox and Ogbene had kind of this quite fluid role going forward, and there were good link-ups between them that I quite liked. There was a really good chance for Smodox where it's Ogbene's cross that gets pulled back to him, almost Connor Chapman-esque, and gets flashed just past the post, which was a frustrating one. You could see how annoyed Smodox was with that one. But yeah, all in all, this was not Ireland at their best at all. I do not think it was a wonderful performance, and I think that a lot of their supporters were pretty disappointed by the fact that it was Keller, the goalkeeper, who kept them in it. But from an Ipswich perspective, I think there's enough to be quite happy with. Importantly, nobody got injured, but I think the performance levels all in all were good. And it's a good experience again for these guys who are going to be coming up against the likes of Bukayo Saka, Anthony Gordon, Declan Rice in league games in the next few weeks and months to get a bit of a taste of what that will be like for them, because the likes of Smodox and to an extent Ogbene and O'Shea, who've only had really kind of a season or two at this level, need to get that full taste of the speed and the intensity of playing against these guys competitively, and they'll only be benefiting from that. So, yeah, I think they'll be frustrated and disappointed, but fingers crossed they'll benefit from it. And then going into the next game for them, hopefully they'll get some minutes as well playing Greece tomorrow evening.
How did I was kind of dipping in and out of the game, Alex, so I can't say I had full focus on it. I've seen kind of bits and pieces of the highlights, but I note that sort of Ogbene in particular got some praise. I think he was kind of named Ireland's player of the match. What sort of role did he play? How did he look?
Yeah, he did. Personally, to be honest, I do think that this was one that should have gone to Keller, because if the goalkeeper had not made countless saves, I think England would have won this possibly 4-5 plus nil, to be perfectly honest. But aside from that, I thought Ogbene played quite well. It was, again, a bit of a free roam role where Ireland's attack was quite fluid, also because they just didn't have a lot of time on the ball. All in all, got it here, they had 24% possession at home, which is a low, low number. Yeah, see Ross's face there. So, again, it was trying to work things on the counter in particular, and he was good at getting into those areas and beating fullbacks, and that was what impressed me. He was kind of coming up against Levi Colwill on, what would that have been? That would have been England's left, so his right. And getting into those good areas there. Nice cutbacks again. I thought the link-ups with Smodox were good, and just getting balls into the box, a couple that were overhit, which was frustrating. And I think he's kind of spoken out after the game as well, saying I was a bit disappointed that I got in some good areas but didn't make more of them. But the first thing is getting into those areas, and given the lack of time on the ball that Ireland had, I think the fact that they were able to do that and create some good opportunities at least gives them a bit of a boost and still coming back from internationals. But yeah, some positives to take from that, kind of especially from Ogbene's roaming floating striker role where he kind of went a bit centrally and a bit outright. And yeah, positives to take for him in particular, I'd say.
Well, no, it's a disappointment that Kieran McKenna is such a training ground coach, and of all managers, I think he's one that would relish sort of 2 weeks on the training pitch, and he's obviously had more than half of his squad away this week. But for someone like Sammy Schmodix, who didn't feature a great, didn't have much of a pre-season at Blackburn, I think him getting another high-quality game in the legs in particular is probably more beneficial than it would have been sort of a week on the training pitch. It will be different per player, but I think for him in particular, just getting some game time and getting fully up to speed, which should hopefully be a good thing.
Yeah, and it runs that theme, doesn't it, with Ipswich-Town Island. We've always had Irish players, haven't we, in Ipswich-Town sides. And remember, you know, back in the day, Darren Murphy, Dave McGoldrick and co. You know, that was our sort of international, you know, watch sort of seeing how they did for Ireland. So, yeah, and AJ, you were saying England, obviously Ireland will play again in November at Wembley. So that will be another time to watch.
Yeah, so they're in the same Nations League group, which is good fun. England obviously got relegated from the top tier of the Nations League in the last campaign, which is why they're both in the Nations League B. So they're with Finland and Greece in that group. So England playing Finland tomorrow and Ireland playing Greece. And then they will meet, I think it's the last game in the group stages. They'll meet at Wembley November 17th. So that'll be an interesting one. That'll be a good one to follow, especially on home soil. I'd imagine that a lot of our listeners will be going over that way. Do we have quite a strong, I don't know, you'll know the answer to this. Do we have quite a strong kind of like England follower base in terms of Ipswich?
Yeah, I know there's a few do go to a lot of games. There's a few that went to obviously the Euros in Germany. Stu, of course, went to, well, you're in Germany, but you weren't able to go to a game, were you? But you were there. I know there's a few that went to Qatar, which was just mental.
Wow.
So salute to you if you're listening, if you did go to Qatar, because I know that was a lot of a pain in the ass to sort out because you'd had to, we won't get into that. But Stu, should we round up the rest of the internationals? Because it's crazy. We've got so many players, you know, playing for Sweden, Iraq, Australia, although Cameron Burgess didn't play for Australia. But yeah, go for it.
Cameron Burgess, obviously, always a long trip for him when he's away with Australia. That was always a bit of a concern last season with jet lag and how that would take its toll. But obviously, he's no longer a regular starter with the players that have come in, so less of a concern. But yeah, he went all the way to Bahrain and was an unused substitute back end of last week. They play in Indonesia tomorrow night. Axel Tuanzebe played 90 minutes against Guinea for Democratic Republic of Congo Friday. They're away to Ethiopia tonight, so hopefully he'll come through that one unscathed. What have we got? Liam Delap, England under-21s, play Austria in Luton tonight. What else have we got? We've mentioned Muric. Alhamadi came on as a late substitute for Iraq in a home game against Oman.
Have you seen that clip, by the way? Have you seen that clip? There's a clip of Alhamadi warming up and it was just like the crowd were like just... It was obviously Iraq. They love football, don't they?
65,000 people. That was brilliant. I love that.
And they're just shouting his name, just chanting his name when he was warming up because they knew he was coming on. They just went, Ali, Ali, Ali. It was, it's brilliant. But yeah, carry on, Austin.
No, that was brilliant. Yeah, I did see that clip. And you got to think how that's going to have him coming home feeling 10 feet tall. This is a guy who we have to keep reminding ourselves. I think at the start of this calendar year was playing League Two football. Is now playing against, he came on against Liverpool. His team that he grew up fanatically supporting and is now having, as you say, 65,000 people chanting his name as he prepares to come on for the national team, the first ever Iraqi to play Premier League football. I know there was an element of disappointment about Ipswich not bringing in a striker, and I think we all felt in the early stages of the window that probably a loan move back to the Championship would be best for his development, but he's here and I think he's shown that he can be a bit of a wild card option for Ipswich. Coming on in games, yes, he's going to be a little bit raw at times, but he's certainly not going to be lacking in terms of energy and aggression and endeavour and all those sort of things. So, Iraq away to Kuwait tomorrow night on Tuesday night. And Jens Kajust, have we decided on that yet? We need official confirmation.
Kajust. Don't think you pronounce the E, do you?
I don't think we do. I think it is a Kajust. So Kajust. This is one where we either need like a club spokesperson to confirm this or we need to talk to him. I think that would be really good to be able to say, have him sit down and say, right, what is your name? How do we say it?
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get that soon. But he's had a couple of subs appearances for Sweden, up to 25 caps now. Sunday he came on just after the hour in a 3-0 home win against Estonia. And the previous game was Thursday last week. So that was away to Azerbaijan. Came on in the 72nd minute and came on at right back in that game as Sweden won 3-1. So, his international action all done and dusted by the end of the weekend. So hopefully we'll link up with the squad sooner rather than later, which will be good.
Yeah, hopefully no, injuries. That is what we all hope. And obviously, as you mentioned, I'm sure McKenna would have liked maybe more players. Obviously, we would have had the Welsh lads, Broadhead and Burns, obviously probably playing for Wales if they weren't injured. So I'm trying to think if there's any other players who could, feature. Look, obviously got a few internationals. Obviously, Lee Davis is the big talking point. Will he ever play for England?
Yeah,
to England, please. That would be great. I love that. What a story that would be.
Yeah,
I'm just having a look. I did a story over the weekend where I think Kieran's had 12 players, first team players to work with over the last few days. I've had a look at it.
Morsi, of course, with Egypt.
Yeah, I think that's. That's done now, the Egypt thing with Sam. I think both sort of parties have moved on from that. He was very proud to represent them, but once the African Cup of Nations kind of came and went last year, I don't think you'll see Sammy back in that squad. But I'm just looking at the breakdown of the squad over the last few days. We've had 10 away on international duty. We've kind of gone through most of them. The three lads with Ireland, Delap under 21s, Kajust, Muric, Axel, Cam Burgess, Al Hamadi, and Kieran Slicker with Scotland under 21s. Then you kind of throw into the mix that there's several players that are still rehabbing from injuries. Harry Clark, he's back on the grass, but not fully fit. Nathan Broadhead, Wes Burns, and George Hurst, who hopefully isn't too far away. Amari, we've mentioned, sort of coming back for medical assessment. So it's only left sort of 12 first-team players for McKenna to work with, which is Walton, Ben Johnson, Wolfenden, Greaves, Davis, Townsend, Morsi, Phillips. We're talking about potential England call-ups. Could he get back in the England set-up this season? We'll see. Luongo is obviously retired from international duty with Australia. Jack Taylor, who has ambitions of making his debut for Ireland, another Irish lad. Connor Chaplin and Jack Clark. So, restricted numbers, not quite what Kieran McKenna would hope for over this international break. But as always, he's kind of said we need to look at the positives. A, it's been many years since Ipswich Town as a football club has had this many players called up. And we have to remind ourselves that that's an honour and it's proof that the club is going in the right direction. And B, a smaller unit means that he can put a bit more care and attention into these individuals and put on some bespoke stuff for some of them. So I like that with Kieran. He's always finding the positive in things. So hopefully they'll come back in dribs and drabs over the next few days. And as he said, then they've got to regroup and get ready pretty quickly because it's another tough game. They're all tough in the Premier League, but in form Brighton away on Saturday.
Yeah, and one player in the squad you just mentioned, Stu, I think could become a future England player. Jacob Greaves. I'm liking the look of him. Watch his space. AJ, any other business from the international break before we go into mailbag?
No, but I will just follow up on the Jacob Greaves thing. Do we remember how, I know this was a bit of a Gareth Southgate thing, but he was quite keen on shoehorning a left-sided centre-back into the team. It was quite often Tyrone Mings, who, to be perfectly honest, was not playing that well at club level and was one of those that I think raised some eyebrows. This is a rarity in terms of having strong left-sided centre-backs and managers like them. There's a reason why Kieran McKenna's gone for him. So I think that although saying that he'll play for England might raise some eyebrows for some, I definitely think that the profile of who he is means that he'll really have a big future if he can continue on this trajectory. And potentially, if he can do that, then England call-ups might not be too far away because, yeah, the left-sided centre-back thing, the left-footed centre-back thing, really does act as a big, big positive for who he is.
Isn't it mad that we're sat here now talking about potentially Ipswich could have, we just mentioned Leif Davis has been the one we've talked about for a little while. Liam Delap and Amari Hutchinson, both in England under-21s. We've just thrown Jacob Greaves in the mix. Calvin Phillips, already an established England international, who could get back in. Talking about Ipswich Town having potential for England internationals. Again, it's just another... If you'd have said that 18 months ago, 2 years ago, people would have said you need locking up. So, a madness, really. England internationals, potentially. And I don't think it's that big a stretch with some of those. It will take Ipswich probably to stay up and become a bit more established and all that sort of stuff. But it's not impossible, as you say, with a few of those players at all.
I'm trying to think the last player to play for England who was an Ipswich Town player. Probably it was the 80s, wasn't it? Ross Osman and Paul Mariner.
Richard Wright make his England debut while he was at Ipswich.
Yeah. Shouting, yeah. He didn't have a great debut, did he, Richard Wright? I think
Did he get sent off?
He saved the penalty. I think he got sent off. I know he saved the penalty, but also conceded the penalty. But yeah, that's something to quickly research. But yeah, it's probably Richard Wright. Obviously, we've had players who have played for us and then moved on. Like Tyro Mings obviously played for us and went on to win Cats for England. Darren Bent. Who else is there? There's loads. Obviously, Kieran Dyer. Back in the day. But yeah, probably Richard Wright was the last Ipswich Town player to play for England when he was still at the club. But, if anybody knows a bit more than us, or definitely me anyway, international football is not my forte. But yeah, you found it, Stu?
No, I'll just try. You're right. I think he gave away a penalty. I know. I remember it was a difficult debut, but I'll have to find out. Yeah, here we go. He gave away not one, but two penalties.
I think he saved one, though, didn't he? I think he did definitely save one.
Versus Malta. Yeah.
Malta. Funny enough, in the mailbag question, in one of the mailbag questions, I've actually already got a good question on that sort of, question. I don't know where I'm going with this. We won't do a mailbag jingle, because last time that wasn't good, AJ. I'm sorry. So I know he put you on the spot.
You did put me on the spot. God, yes, you did.
But we won't do that. So we're just going to get straight into it. But what sort of question do you want, boys?
We've been talking a lot of football so far this pod. So let's start off with a non-football. Let's ease us into this. Pick us a non-football question.
This does connect to football.
That's all right.
We've probably had this question before, but I want to do it. Because I know it can change because of how you're feeling. But this is from Instagram. And this is actually from Facebook, actually. I actually was sort of going through all our social medias. And this is from Facebook. And it's basically asking, what chocolate bar do we buy at services? So what's your chocolate bar or choice? This man said he has a double decker. That's his choice. Let me quickly find his name. But let us know, Stu,
AJ, agreed on the double decker. It's an underrated chocolate bar. I think I've said that before.
Yeah.
What was the one that I got with you? This is going back a while. I remember we came back from one of our international trips last year and we went straight to a WH Smith for some reason. I think it was one of those like Lindor ones. Those are always good. I like things with caramel in them, even just like the dairy milk caramel ones. I feel like these are quite boring answers compared to what you guys have probably come up with. But yeah, those would be my two. Go with.
Okay, this is from Junior Swede Harris, by the way. Good question. I'm everything. Like last night, I went to the shop because I just wanted some chocolate, which is it's a bad slope because, just going for a shop, just get a chocolate bar. Oh, but I got a Whisper Gold. Let's do.
Wake up there, Russ.
Whisper Gold. But a Whisper. And also, have you also been trying those gold bars? It's called, they're new, they're really new. Let me find it quickly. Chocolate bar. I'm getting too in depth for this.
Are you Googling gold chocolate bars? We're going to have a whole Willy Wonka sidetrack in a minute.
Yeah.
We did a whole crisps pod, didn't we, many years ago? Maybe we'll do a chocolate bar one.
But yeah, I'm easy, to be fair. I'm not the biggest fan of nuts. So I don't, I want like Snickers and stuff, but any different, I like a good Twirl, I like a Mars bar. Yeah, obviously I'll do the deal. You get two for a price of, it is expensive really at service stations, but that's my go-to. But yeah, that is a good question though. Next question is from Bainesy, and I like this question. This is from Tom Baines. And it's going on linking with the international talk. In the light of Steve Yaman McLaren taking the Jamaican job.
Yeah, man.
Take your man. If you could take over as manager of a small nation, where would you pick? Because there's a few actually managers like, you know, Lee Bowyer is at Montserrat, and there's a, I've seen a story that one of the town academy boys has won a cap for their under 21s, I think. So
Chris Kiwamia is one of the Caribbean nations, isn't he? I can't remember.
British Islands, I think. British Virgin Islands.
British Virgin Islands, is it? Yeah.
I think something like that.
While we're talking.
Yeah.
What small nation would you want to be in charge of? I'll take San Marino because...
Oh, I love it.
It's a wealthy place, I believe. It's a bit like Monaco. So good lifestyle there. And you can't really go wrong with them, can you? Because they lose every game. I say that. They've just won their first game in however many years, haven't they? But, if you can pluck one win every few decades, you're a hero. So,
What is the expectancy there? Like, what does the FA of their, you know, San Marino, do they want, like, what do they want, you know? Do they just...
Try hard.
Yeah.
Do your best.
Play for the badge, you know, play for the country. I want somewhere like hot, like Bahamas or something, or like Jamaica.
I was thinking, what is the place that we've been regaled about stories about? Because our boss has been there multiple times, but at least once recently. And they put out job adverts for their football team at national level as well. The Maldives was an interesting one that came to my mind. I also like the idea of just because Stu went for San Marino. The eternal enemy, seemingly, at least in terms of the fact they always get drawn into the worst groups. And I think that actually San Marino beat this team last week, and San Marino's last win before that, back in 2004, was also against this team, Liechtenstein. I think that would be good fun. That would be brilliant having Stu managing San Marino, and I'd take on Liechtenstein, and we'd see how we'd fare, because I feel like that's a similar level there. In terms of what you'd have at your disposal, that would be good fun.
I am talking to small footballing nations. I had an idea when I first joined the paper many years ago, and I had a bit of free rein to go off and do sort of offbeat features. And an idea that I got halfway down the line with but never saw through was to see if I could pick up an international football cap by representing Sealand, which is it's basically a sort of offshore, is it like an oil rig offshore platform in the North Sea? If you sort of head out from Felixstowe for several miles, and they actually have a football team that plays in, not obviously officially sort of FIFA registered, but those really sort of micro nations also play football matches against each other in various, not obviously out at sea. I think they just play at non-league grounds at different places. They had a few sort of Z-list celebrities play for them at one stage. I think Ralph Little turned out for them a couple of times. So I'm not quite sure how you become eligible to represent them, but I wanted to do that just to say that I could, just to say I'd got an international football cap, inverted commas. Maybe there's still a chance. I'll have to look into it.
Be difficult if they were playing out at sea. One wrong kick and all of a sudden the game's done because your ball's in the water. So I feel like that would be difficult. Yeah, what's happened to this newspaper? We can't do things like that anymore. That'd be great. We could have had a published author and international football footballer on our podcast, and now
update Twitter profile. Yeah,
that would be brilliant.
Yeah, the Wikipedia page too, I think. You'll actually, you know,
just looking at who Sealand have played against. The Chagos Islands, Saborga, Somaliland, all sorts of different teams.
This podcast has gone very weird. Very weird.
There was a documentary of like the worst team in like football. Like, they kept losing all the time. And I think there's like a team like was it Samoan Islands, I think, or something like that? Something crazy like that. But yeah. For me though, I'm picking the team in the Caribbean, because it's just lovely weather. And, you know, there's probably not much expectancy. It's just, you know, just try to get through as many local lads as possible and try to improve them. And then if there is a few, you can go, oh, they play in England at League Two level or something. Yeah, you come over. Just come over, lads. Enjoy the weather. So, yeah, good question, though, Bainesy. Very good question. Maldives, though, I think, is probably Heathie's answer as well, AJ. Next question is from Robert Enderby. What sport do you find the most boring to watch and why? Once again, I think we may have had this question before, but it can change. Stu, AJ, don't say football.
No, we're not, Mark. Don't worry. Yeah, easy one for me on this one. Unfortunately, I'll probably get shouted up by a lot of people. I just can't do cricket. I'm sorry. I can't. Really complicated. Not a lot in it. I just, yeah, it's one that I can't properly get into. Another one I haven't really tried too much on the other side. Essentially, the same sport on the other side of the world. Baseball is another one that I think even the Americans don't really like. I don't really know why then. I feel like you have to be quite drunk to enjoy it. So, yeah, those are my two, unfortunately. But cricket's probably the standout answer. I'm really sorry.
I can't watch full game of cricket. I've actually gone and watched a few, and I'm like, I just go there and drink and just, you know, be merry. But to actually watch it full on, I know those two once. Remember, we're in Germany, and I think that's when England won the World Cup back in 2019. I think you, me, and Andy was in McDonald's in Germany, and we were like watching it, and we just celebrated because they won. But yeah, Stu, what's your boring sport?
I do like cricket. Unbelievable athleticism in cricket when you think you're defending a ball, a rock hard cricket ball bouncing towards your head at 100 miles an hour. I think have a lot of respect for that. Formula One, motorsport, it's just, I can see the appeal for people that are into it. But for me, I've never found it that accessible. I don't know whether it's because the only time I found it more accessible was with the Netflix series Drive to Survive. And then you buy into the personalities and stuff. And I don't know whether it's because you're watching these kind of man-made objects and you can't see the personalities of the sportsmen involved during the actual action taking place is part of it. I don't know. Part of it is, you know, I know part of it, the appeal is the kind of the battle between the manufacturers and who can create the best car. But the times I've tried to sort of dip into it, it's didn't seem to be a lot of overtaking, and it's all quite predictable. So yeah, not one that's ever gripped me. F1.
Yeah, I'm the same. Just if you go and watch it yourself, like in person, I know it's like, oh yeah, these cars really fast, but then you just, they'll just go around and, well, they're gone now. Well, they're back again. Right. Obviously, it's like a very dangerous sport, you know, those crashes, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, Formula One's not for me. Any other sports? Like obviously bowls. I'm not going to go and watch bowls. Although there's a good film actually called Black Ball. Is it called Black Ball?
Yes.
Yes. Good film. Very good film. Where it's,
The Welsh actor, what's his name? Brees. His name escapes me now, but yeah, he's sort of the
Paul
bad
K.
boy of bowls.
Paul K.
Oh, it's not who I was thinking of.
Yeah, Johnny Vegas is in it though, and Vince Vaughn is in it. Okay. So yeah, but yeah, it's a good film, very good film. But yeah, bad boy of bowls. It's like England versus like the rest of the world and stuff. It's a good film, but yeah, the rest, yeah. Like snooker, like once again, watching a long game of snooker.
It's quite relaxing. I think it's
It depends, really. I like, obviously, like when, you know, Ronnie O'Sullivan plays and he's just like boom, 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 147. But but we can go with it. So we're going very too deep into this. But
Stu, is this what happens? You get to a point where you go to TK Maxx, you come back with some new glasses. Your wife's come over with a measuring tape. You put up your new mirror and then you sit down for a cup of tea and a relaxing game of snooker.
Yeah. The gentle clink of the balls and the whispery commentary. It's, that's all I want from life, Alex.
Yeah.
Glad you enjoyed it.
I like it. This is a question from Instagram. This is from Samuel Hurl. I think we've had this question before, but I want to know AJ's answer, but you still can get involved as well. If you could redo university and pick a different career, what would you choose? I didn't go to university, so I'm not really involved in this. So, yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting. So for those of you who don't know, I studied journalism at the University of Lincoln, which was made famous by The Inbetweeners, which is what always gets quoted at me, I assume. Did you guys both know The Inbetweeners line about the University of Lincoln?
No.
Was I need to see if I can remember it now. Something along the lines of goodbye, bright future. Hello, University of Lincoln, which, yeah, fair enough. First rate education, that's the line. Yeah. So I went there and studied journalism. It was fine. What would I choose if I had to change it? I quite liked doing languages until like A level, and then I didn't really like it as much. So maybe something like that. I quite like the politics thing, combine them together, maybe something like international relations. Found quite interesting. Something businessy. Again, I was all right at doing business studies and stuff like that, which is funny for someone who can't do maths. But yeah, something international business, international relations, something along those lines would be the route I go down.
I'm like, do you know what I want to
second career in mind, Ross? Surely, if you're even putting the uni thing to one side, would if you started again, would you do something different?
Yeah, probably. I wanted to be a chef actually before I got into this, but a lot of people know that I just didn't want to stand up and all that stress because there's a lot of standing up in being a chef. I like food, but I would actually like maybe get into some business, maybe actually own my own like cafe or restaurant. Like Roscoe's Cafe is in my mind. So that's my plan B if this all fails.
They've already opened one of those. I remember in Swansea. You'd need to. Do you not remember? We went and got the photo there. Or yeah, I got the photo. We didn't get one with you outside, but you have to be careful of not treading on their toes.
It's a Swansea, though. You know, I'll set one up here somewhere. You know, Roscoe's Cafe. So yeah, maybe a bit of business potentially. I don't know what else. I think I'd be really good at like front of house though, like front of house or like a restaurant. So yeah.
Are we talking something sort of high end, or are we talking sort of Greasy Spoon?
Maybe starts a Greasy Spoon, and then I, you know, make my money there, and then I, you know, move on somewhere else. But I don't know. Maybe too classy. High end is probably not my. That's more Heathy, isn't it? I think that's more his jam. For me, I think Greasy Spoon. Get the boys in. Give them a fry up sorted. Set them up for the rest of the day. So that's my plan.
I'd want you doing something like TV. You'd be great on TV. Just doing something like putting Ross in strange situations would be really good fun. Like having you do like getting filmed on loads of roller coasters or something like that, or like eating scorpions, like extreme different things. I think you'd be great at that. That would be like proper I'm a Celeb. So I think we had a question of who'd be best on I'm a Celeb, and I think we all chose you. That's, same kind of vibe, but that's what I think you'd be good at.
Okay. Do you know what? I've been really addicted to watching Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares recently. I don't know why, I just keep watching it. He's a new series come out, and I just love seeing it just fall apart, all these restaurants. And then eventually they do actually get sorted, obviously, from Gordon Ramsay. But some of their, like, kitchens and some of their, like, walk-in fridges is, like, just... Anyway, it's a great series. Stu, I think we've sort of know this. I know your dad and accountancy and stuff, but is there any other jobs you would do? Or maybe, you know, you are a published author now, so you don't have to worry about that. But
I've always got teaching's always been in the back of my mind, potentially as a different career route at some stage, and that's still something I could look at maybe. I liked science at school. I kind of wish I'd taken that a bit further. I like the kind of logical, experimental side of things of science. I was quite liked that. So maybe if I started again, I'd take that a little bit further and see where it takes me. I would definitely think a little bit more about what jobs might pay a little bit more if I stuck with them early on. Not a lot of thought went into that when I went down the media and journalism road, but
obviously a doctor as well, but you know, that's a lot of hard work, but
Ross, I'm not I'd come and have a breakfast at your Greasy Spoon, no problem. I'd take the risk there on the hygiene rating. Not sure if I was just about to be put under on the operating table and the last face I saw was you. I might have some concerns.
I did think he meant you because of Dr. Watson. That was kind of the point. I was thinking Dr. Ross would be, no offense, Ross, but Jesus.
Yeah. That'd be a nice, like, nice nurse. I can, like, you know, look after people, you know. But I'll let the expert do that. I'll just be there just to give you a nice helping hand and hold your hand when you're about to get, you know, opened up and stuff like that.
I don't, I don't mind being called the doctor on here, but I don't quite fancy putting in the 9-10 years studying to get to that point, if I'm completely honest. So I'll just be the fake doctor. That's fine.
Don't mind that. Let us know as well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are a doctor yourself. You know, I'd be interested if you've got any doctors or any, like, dentists or anything in that field listening to this podcast. And you can give some advice maybe going forward.
Yes, please.
Indeed. Next question is from good old James Farthing from good old Brooklyn, New York, which is amazing. He said, which of the current squad will improve the most from their current perceived level to where they end the season? Amari probably improved the most last season, could be the most coachable. Who works best in our system or who has the highest ceiling?
It's a good question.
I feel like there's a few different categories in terms of like who works best in the system, who's the most coachable, highest ceiling. I don't think he has the highest ceiling per se. The one who stands out in the system is Axel Tuanzebe, who I think really does work well with that in terms of being the kind of the hybrid right back, right centre back. I quite like stick with a defender in terms of who I think will develop the best in over the course of the season, probably Jacob Greaves. I just think that, especially this year, Ipswich are going to spend a lot of time defending. They're not going to have a lot of the ball. It's going to be quite a lot, but it's going to be quite deep in terms of the shape and the system and all those different kind of things. I just think that, albeit that I love all the attacking talent and I think they're going to have time to show it, I do think there'll be more time for the defensive side of the game, and that's going to put a spotlight on Jacob Greaves. And I think that having come in as this perceived championship centre-back making a step up, I think by the end of the season, you're going to see him as someone who's got this bright future we all have been talking about on this podcast. And before then, I think there was a really high ceiling and kind of platform for him to keep developing.
So we're kind of talking, I guess this would be the Cameron Burgess Award, someone who had a perceived level of being a head on a stick, League One, solid centre half that no one really thought could break the barriers that he did in terms of becoming a top end championship centre half. Someone who's maybe would surprise us in terms of the levels that they're going to go through. I think Jack Clark is someone at the moment that maybe it's because of the number of signings that have come through the door and he's coming quite late and we've not seen a great deal of him so far, but he's, I think he's someone that under McKenna's coaching and in this kind of exciting attacking bold brand of football is someone that I think can go up through the levels quite quickly and is someone that's going to excite us by the end more and more as the season goes on. I guess Calvin Phillips comes into this conversation as well, which sounds a strange one given his pedigree and what he's done in his career. But if we're talking about his level, his perceived level at this moment in time nationally is someone who's seen that he's on a bit of a downward trajectory with sort of two difficult years at Man City and a difficult spell at West Ham on loan last season. I was really encouraged by the game against Fulham. I really liked that moment when he came off almost sort of shocked him, I think, the standing ovation as he came off. And, you know, then he sort of responded and G'd up the crowd. And that says to me that this is just a player that needs to be in the right place with the right manager, with the right amount of love behind him again. And, you know, you could really unlock his full potential again. So I think he's someone that will be talked about very differently at the end of the season than he is sort of currently. So I'd chuck those two in the mix.
Love that. Now, this is a question just for me, but I've also got a question to both of you as well that sort of goes with this. This is from James Ponchard. How big is Ross Islens? It might sound geeky, but I'm generally interested in Roscoe's photography setup and workflow for a game. I used to have an extender, Alan Partridge meme, but I got rid of that. Actually, no, I haven't got rid of it. It's upstairs somewhere. But that used to be a 60 to 600. So it got me, we can really go and zoom in right into the over there. But now I've only got a 300, which does a job, though. Does a job. And I've also got a wide-angle lens, so if they come up close and like jumping on top of me, I can, you know, make sure I still get it. So, yeah, I just got two bodies. They work for me. Work both during the game. I've got a nice little SD card reader that goes in my phone, and then all the pictures come up, and I pick the best one and put it into the Google Drive that Stu and AJ sort of pick from. And that's pretty much it, really. I let the boys do the captions. They're better than that. You know, my spelling, you know, and trying to name it sometimes not great. But, yeah, it's pretty set up. Simple setup, really. Other photographers, they've got loads of stuff. But for me, keep it simple, does the job. And also, I don't want to carry too much. And I've also got my little stool, which people always love when I bring it up. Some people think it's like a old, like, camera reel. And it's just a little stool that I sit on, and it does really well. But yeah, hope that answers your question, James.
That's when you don't lose it or have it stolen in Germany or something like that.
If anybody in Germany, or I think it was actually in Austria, the Kufstein
Stadium. If anyone who works at the Kufstein Arena is listening to this podcast for any reason, please do keep an eye out for a random stool if you see it.
Yeah, honestly, I swear someone definitely stole it, because it was near you, and it's...
Whoa!
I'm not accusing you of stealing it, but it was there and it was not there, and it was anyway.
Do you get big lens envy, Ross, when other snappers are?
More,
I was going to say swinging their equipment around. let's go with that. Is that a thing?
Yes and no. I think I just know. Like, I look at that and go, that's a lot of money. I don't have that much money. You know, as you said earlier, Stu, you know, when we go into this industry, we're like, oh, it's not as much money as you think it would be. But yeah, there's one guy I always sit next to, and I'm like, whoa, that is like a mortgage.
Basically, he's got a big one.
He's got a big one.
You're so, looking at it going, yeah. If those players come and jump on him, he's going to be able to sort that out. Yeah. So if we're going,
all I can think of
in this conversation is thinking about the office when they're winding up Gareth talking about if a man attacked you from behind, would you be able to handle it? Well, that's all that was going through my head when you talked about men jumping all over you just now.
Well, the big lens though don't work, because obviously you need the wide angle to get the picture. If you've got the long lens, it won't focus, and you know it's too zoomed out. So. But yeah, the big lens does me well, James. Do not worry. It does me well indeed. But yeah, question for you Stu and AJ. What's sort of like your main sort of piece of work that you know you need to have when you go, obviously laptops and stuff, but obviously dictaphones are not really used anymore. It's more your phone and stuff. But I know you're old school with your notepad and stuff like that, which I love to see. I love seeing that when I see journalists with notepads and stuff going old school. But anything else? Headphones maybe for listening to audio? Anything else that you use?
Pretty bog standard, Ross. Yeah, laptop, phone, headphones, notepad. I do still like to take down, even during pro. It's just old habit, really. We obviously record everything now because you have to be pretty faithful with your translation of interviews. But I do still take down shorthand for interviews. It can speed things up a little bit. Or just be able to useful to have a timestamp to go back to things that you want to. But no, we're not like you. We don't need lots of fancy equipment
and stools. Yeah, hey, Alex, do you have anything in particular that's maybe?
No notepad for me, just vibes basically. I use my notes app on my phone more than anything, to be honest. When I have these kind of things, and I just have thousands of them that probably need organizing, where anything that I need to remember or need jotting down is on there. And the good thing is I can look them all up and do it that way. But yeah, it is a bit of a mess. Other than that, the best purchase I've made in the last year or so. I think I got Black Friday last year, was noise cancelling headphones. So someone who probably has some form of like ADD, trying to like focus on things when you're working to deadline and trying to make sure you're listening, and like even missing out one word can change everything when you're transcribing. And if you're sat there with normal headphones on, I find it quite easy to, oh, there's someone in the background talking about something that's happened in the game, or just something that's catching your attention. One in particular that stands out was the first game I covered actually at Needham. Do you remember, Shu, the conspiracy theories that we had at Needham? Things like this when you're trying to focus. So noise cancelling headphones have been brilliant for me in terms of just being able to sit there, be in your own little bubble, and just thrash out all the work you need to do. That's my big piece of kit.
Love it. Final question, because we're now getting to the hour mark, and it is just sort of links to, you know, a player that could potentially be returning. And this is from Andre. He went, when both fit, who do you think starts? Liam Delap or George Hurst? What do you reckon, boys? Big question.
I think it depends game to game, because I think they're similar in a lot of ways. They've got differences in terms of one who's, I think, a little bit taller, better at holding up the ball potentially in terms of getting into those nice spaces, good movement. In George Hurst, someone who kind of a core group of players, know will link up with them very, very well. They're so often on the same wavelength. And others, especially when you're coming up against kind of big, powerful centre-backs, that's when I'd want a Liam Delap to really get stuck into them, or potentially a centre-back where you know you've got a chance to bully them. For example, Delap against, who was it, Gerald Kwanzaa on opening day was just such a mismatch. It was brilliant from an Ipswich perspective. All about finding the right battles and the right link-ups. You might find that player X links up better with Delap or with Hurst, and then also thinking about whose strengths are going to come up better against the Premier League defenders you're about to face. I feel like if you had to choose one kind of like set on, Delap would be probably where my head's at, but is that recency bias? I don't know, potentially. At the end of the day, it's not easy to then not start your £15 million striker, is it? But I think it really will depend game on game.
I think if you'd have asked me that question earlier in the summer, I'd have probably erred towards George Hurst before the injury struck, because I was and still am positive that George Hurst is someone that's still got a lot more development to go under Kieran McKenna, and is someone that can become adept at this level. And we'll never know how it might have turned out, because it might have been that, you know, if George Hurst had been fully fit and firing, I think, you know, certainly with some of the other forward players injured, he probably would have been the starting striker for the opening game. And then you don't get the Delap performances that we've seen, and the whole dynamic potentially changes. Delap may have been signed. I don't know if he necessarily was signed to be the out-and-out number nine starting centre forward. He might have been signed as a versatile forward option that would sometimes play wide right, as he did for Hull, and might have been eased in slowly, but it started the way it has. Hurst has got injured. Delap's had to start up front. Delap's had some exciting performances so far, and it will be hard for George Hurst to sort of displace him, certainly in the immediate future. But yeah, as Alex says, there might be occasions where both get on the pitch. That Hurst, I think what you'll see is that the centre forward will drop, and Delap's done this a little bit, but Hurst will probably do it a little bit more. He is that more of a link striker that drops into the pockets, and then the two sort of number 10s, as we're increasingly seeing, whether that's a Szmodics and Hutchinson or Delap, could be one of those players that then kind of get beyond the centre forward, and the centre forward ends up actually deeper than the two 10s at times. So it's not impossible that we'll see them both on the pitch at some stage, but it'll be great when Hurst is back and we've got those options. Imagine, you know, Delap sort of empties the tank on 60-70 minutes, and then George Hurst steps off the bench. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, great options for Kieran McKenna to have. And thanks for all your questions, as always. Hope you've enjoyed another mailbag special. Boys, I think we'll end it here. But any other business? Anything else you want to plug? Stu, anything from you?
Buy the book, please, everybody. I won't keep going on about it. Jason Dizell, Follow the Thunder. Drop me a line at the email address if you'd like one. Thanks for all the support for all those that have got it so far.
Love it. AJ, anything else from you?
Buy his book, please. Yeah. Make sure you go email the address that he's just read out and go buy it. Yeah, that's pretty much all I've got to add.
Top man. Wow. Now, my time to do this outro. Let's do this then. Thanks all for listening, of course. If you haven't already, follow and support our sponsors at Manscaped. Use the code KOA to get 20% off and free delivery for all your below-the-waist beer, ears, nose, all that sort of stuff where all your hair grows. That rhymed a little bit like that. Also, follow us on all our socials, Kings of Anglia on the Twitter, on the Facebook, on the YouTubes, the Instagrams, the TikToks. Facebook, did I already say? Probably did. And also, if you haven't already, and I'm trying to plug this more, we've also got a great deal at the moment. It's at £3 for 3 months. I think that's still going. And also, download our app if you haven't already, which is a great little app. If you're watching on video, boom, it comes up and it's no ads. You don't have to worry about ads. And you can just go through all our stories. And also, I like to see, you can see the paper, you know, just read the paper digitally. And, you know, if you ever see your face in there, you can save it. And there we go. It's on your phone. So check that out. Download the app on all different, you know, devices. I think, yeah, Apple, Android, whatever phone you use. And yeah, download it. But thanks again for listening to another Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. We should be back later in the week to look ahead to the next Premier League game, which is against Brighton, which is going to be a tough game. Obviously, Kieran McKenna got that little link there because of their interest. But yeah, it should be an interesting one. Hope you all have a good week. Thanks again. Bye-bye for now.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.